That was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. It was great to hear and great to see so many different places represented. Now, I am fairly confident you did not come this afternoon to listen to me. I've just got that, just kind of feel that. My message will be short, but I think it's very important. Here on Sunday nights at the Granby congregation, we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount. Probably most of us in here are familiar with that particular sermon that Jesus gave, and we have it recorded in more than one place. But we talked a few weeks ago about the power of influence. And at your age, and teenagers are a little bit older, and then there's some older than that, but most of you may not think how important your influence is, but everyone here has an influence over somebody. And some of you may have an influence over a lot of people, whether it's at school or maybe it's at home. You're having an influence over parents or brothers or sisters. So you have an influence over a lot of people. Jesus talked about the power of influence in that sermon because he knew how important it was. And he used a couple of classic examples that the people in the first century were very familiar with. He talked about salt and talked about light. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, he says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It's then good for nothing to be thrown out, but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." These people lived fairly close to the Dead Sea, and you know that's probably the saltiest water on the face of the earth. But that particular salt had a lot of impurities in it. And so if you were just to take the salt out of that particular water, and if you didn't put it through the right processes, that salt would be worthless. It'd almost be worse than worthless. Cause a lot more harm than good. Because salt had a lot of uses then, especially it was used to preserve. Jesus wanted his disciples, and he's giving this lesson on the Sermon on the Mount, to prepare people for his kingdom. That would be coming in just a few short years from the time he gave this. So he's wanting the people to understand how important it is for them to preserve their society. And you look all the way back to the days of Noah, all the millions of people living on the face of the earth, and there were millions and millions of people by then. Genesis chapter 6, we find out that their most all people, their thoughts were just of wickedness all the time. And how awful that must have been. What an awful place to live in. There were only 8 people he could find on the entire planet. 8 people he could find. And how sad that must have been. Can you imagine out of millions of people there being just 8?
8 people. Sorry about that. And so what did God end up doing? Destroying the world. Why? There wasn't enough salt in it. A little bit later, there were some cities called Sodom and Gomorrah. Very wicked. Abraham begged God, essentially. Started out with 50. What about if we found just 50 people? Would you keep it? All right. Well, 40 then? Yeah, I'll save it from 40, 30, okay, 20, okay, 10. Yeah, couldn't find 10 people in that city. There wasn't enough salt in it. There weren't enough godly people. There wasn't enough salt in the city to preserve it. And you see that throughout time. Godly people preserve society, keep it from corruption, make it a better place. But we also know from Jesus' lesson that a Christian, a disciple of his, can lose that preserving influence, can lose the saltiness. We see a lot of Christians in the New Testament that it happened to. Remember in Revelation chapter 3, John is talking about those 7 cities and he gets to the last one, Laodicea. And the Christians there had forgot about the power of their influence. And they thought that things were so great. They had a lot of wealth and they had a lot of prestige and a lot of honor. But what did Jesus say he wanted to do to them? Spit them out of his mouth. They weren't preserving their society. They were actually making their society worse. And they were supposed to be God's people. So we're to be preserving our community. God's people are to preserve our community. Jesus went on and used another illustration. He says, you're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. So let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. It's interesting that throughout the Bible, but especially in the New Testament, God's people are likened to light. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we live in, God's people live in the realm of light. We walk in light. Several places in Paul's letter to the church at Ephesus, he emphasizes how Christians are to be light, a light to the world. In Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 7, he writes this. In verse 8, for you were once darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. There he says three things are necessary for someone to be a light. They're to do what's good, they're to do what's right, and they're to do what's true. And so when you, today, when we do what's good, when we do what's right, when we do what's true, we're making the world a better place. We're making it brighter. And when we don't do those things, what happens? It becomes a little darker. It's like the flame gets a little dimmer because we're not doing what's good or what's right or what's true. See, that's something we must do as God's people because the world is going to live in darkness. The world likes darkness. Jesus came into the world to shed light. And that's what he wants his followers to do. In Philippians chapter 2, when Paul writes to that church, he says something very similar. He says, do all things without complaining and disputing. I doubt if he really meant that, but he might have. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. How do they do that? The next verse says, holding fast the word of life. What are Christians to be doing? Shedding a light in a world that's dark. It's crooked, it's perverse, it's evil, and it's wicked. And we all know that's the way the world is. And so Christians, when we do what's right and good and true, we're making the world a little better place, regardless how small that is. You know, in a very dark room, all it takes is a tiny little flame to bring light. And so that's what we need to be doing. As people who follow Christ, we're to be doing every little act of good that we do makes the world a little better place, makes it just a little bit brighter. And that also means, as he says in Philippians chapter 1, that we approve what is excellent. There are some excellent things out in the world. You and I, what are we supposed to do? We're to approve of them and tell people we approve of them. That's good. That's good. So when we see things that are good and right and true, we need to tell people those are good and right and true. And the opposite of that is true as well. Still in Ephesians, or back to Ephesians chapter 5, going on to verse 11, he says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them, for it's shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. What are we to do also? Well, by bringing light into the world, we expose darkness. So that's also part of what we need to do. And yes, you can do that. Your age, absolutely. You don't have to go along with the crowd. You don't have to approve what the crowd approves of. You can point out what's good and what's right and what's true. And by doing that, every single time you do that, every time, you're making the world just a little better place. You're making your school a little better place, a little brighter place. And there's not as much darkness there. So every time you do something good, every time you point out something that's good and show what's good, you make that place a little brighter and a little better. And it's a place that all of us would want to be in. In Ephesians chapter 4, he says this. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. When we set a proper example, when we approve what's excellent, when we do what's good and right and true, we show people by our example what's good and what's right and what's true. Regardless of how small or insignificant we may think it is. Somebody drops a book in the hall and we pick it up for them. We may not think that's a big deal, but we made the world just a little better place by doing it. Made the world a little brighter place by doing it. Because we're doing what's good and what's right and what's true. Our example is absolutely critical. In 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter's writing to Christians and he tells them this, beginning in verse 11. He says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles," among those in darkness, "that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." Set a proper example. Live in such a way that people can't honestly say bad things about you. They can't say, "Well, boy, old Bobby, he's dishonest, or he's immoral, or you know what he does, and he claims to be so good." Don't live in such a way that people can honestly say those things. Yeah, some may say them and lie about them. That probably happens to everybody. But don't live in such a way, have your conduct honorable, so that they can't honestly say those things. And that people know you are ones who approve what's excellent. And that you do go about doing what's good and what's right and what's true. Many of us grew up singing, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine." And when we do that, by setting a proper example, by influencing other people, by what we're doing, the good that we're doing, we make the world a better place and a brighter one. And that's the message I want you to take home with you today. Every little thing you do that's good or right or true does make the world just a little bit better place. Yes, how you live is very important, and you can affect the world and make it a better place. Thank you.